streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is December 5th, 2012. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great story for you tonight with our guest, Ms. Anita Faison. She is the mother of Sharon Mabry. Sharon is currently in prison. She was wrongly convicted of the murder of her boyfriend. But the story goes deeper than that. It involves drugs, prostitution, police corruption, and several other things. But we're going to let Anita tonight share that story with us and fill you in on what's going on with Sharon. But before we bring her on, let me welcome Boyd to the show.
Thanks, ladies and gentlemen. We thank everyone who tunes into the radio show every Wednesday night, and we thank everyone for their support with the show. So without further ado, we'll have Sharon's mother formally introduce herself, and we'll get the show started.
My name is Anita Faison. I'm in Detroit, and this is where Sharon grew up. I want to thank you for allowing me this opportunity on your radio show to discuss my daughter, Sharon, and justice. I hope someone can hear my plea for justice for her. Sharon is currently serving a 20-year-to-life sentence for a murder of her ex-boyfriend, a crime she didn't commit. Sharon is incarcerated at Tonic Correctional Facility, a medium-security prison located in Westchester County, New York. There are many factors that contribute to my daughter's travesty of justice. First, Sharon was represented by a lawyer that didn't even care if she was innocent or not because of her lifestyle. So the lawyer failed to bring forth any information that would exonerate her. Second, the prosecutors unjustly indicted Sharon for her boyfriend's murder and unjustly did so without any concrete evidence that linked her to the crime of the actual killers. Third, it is my belief that Sharon's connection with the police and her questionable relationship with her parole officer led to her wrongful conviction. Here are some of the facts that should be considered that many legal advocates believe contribute to the sequence of events which resulted in Sharon being framed and railroaded for her ex-boyfriend's murder. And you can decide for yourself. In 1992, while Sharon was on parole, she was persuaded by her then parole officer to give him information on criminal activities of other people, which included and was not limited to drug dealing and prostitution rings. Being involved with people like this violated the term of Sharon's parole contract, which clearly stipulated she should stay away from these type of people who were breaking the law while she was under parole supervision. Once Sharon started associating with people of bad characters, she gained knowledge of various police who bought drugs from her, patronized a brothel that she ran with her boyfriend. Sharon possessed this type of knowledge, was very dangerous, and placed her in harm's way. Since Sharon was on parole, she became fearful of the police and parole officials' ability to send her back to prison, so she stopped reporting to parole. With that in mind, the people sought to frame Sharon for her ex-boyfriend's murder to get her off the street and silence her. Additionally, the police passed on information to the prosecutors who in turn created multiple theories in order to get the jury to decide on which one would convict Sharon for helping others to rob her boyfriend, which led to his death. Sharon was indicted by herself and stood alone and convicted on acting in concert with actual murders in a separate indictment with no ties to the murder of her boyfriend. In 1997, 16 years ago, Sharon stupidly went to the police station in Queens Village under the influence of drugs to inquire about her ex-boyfriend's murder. Her sole purpose of going to the police station was to gain entry where she used to live and to obtain her personal belongings, which was deemed a murder crime scene. Before the detectives would give Sharon permission to enter the premises, they wanted identification from her to first establish who she was. But after police routine search of the database revealed that Sharon was a wanted person for parole violation and that she was once in prison before another crime she was falsely accused of and naively pleaded guilty to, the police began a series of methods to get Sharon to admit that she was involved in her boyfriend's murder when she wasn't. Psychological tactics or terrorizing and physical abuse Sharon by the detectives were used against her until she made false statements implicating herself and others in the murder, when in fact she and the other people who she was forced to falsely accuse were nowhere around or involved in the murder or had any knowledge that her boyfriend was going to be or had been murdered. To note, Sharon was withdrawn from drugs at the time. She entered the police station. During her police interview, the police noticed Sharon's condition and took advantage of her. By the detective coercing her and forcing her to make statements with a promise he would let her go if she decided what he asked her to do. Since Sharon was unwilling to go along with the detective's schemes, he placed a gun to her head, making derogatory racial slurs, forcing her to urinate on herself and refusing to give her food to eat until she gave a convincing statement that the with the district attorney that would help and would implicate her and others in this participating in her boyfriend's murder. Now, on that account, Sharon went along with the good cop and the bad cop game out of fear for her life. And because of the detective abusive tactics, her withdrawing from drugs also played a significant part in her going along with the detective's deception. So Sharon wrote a couple of details that the detectives gave her after 12 to 16 hours of abuse. In her drugged-out state of mind, Sharon included also other details in her statement that couldn't even remotely link her to the murder or the killer of her ex-boyfriend. And sometime later, the detectives brought in other people for questions based on Sharon's false accusations of them, which coerced by the detectives as a direct result of her falsely implicating herself and others in her boyfriend murder. Shortly afterwards, the people Sharon falsely accused were released, and that was because of a variable alibi, and Sharon the same alibi was not. Even though Sharon's alibi was deliberately suppressed by the detectives and not passed on to the prosecutors who were seeking a conviction against Sharon, when other prosecutors knew that she had an alibi, they did not act on this information. Sharon's lifestyle, her prior felony convictions and drug addiction past, and her being on drugs and withdrawing from them from time to time during the police interview, and her so-called friend's testimony that corroborated her false statements to the detectives resulted in the jury wrongly convicting her. Now, from my understanding, the same detectives who coerced Sharon to make false statements to participate in her boyfriend's murder have done this before, but in New York, it appears that police frequently get away with this type of unlawful conduct of falsely arresting people, which had led to them being convicted. Now, to the extent that years later, when it is found out that the detectives wrongly arrested people for crimes they didn't commit, oftentimes they are not held liable for this travesty of justice. They just cause. The detectives are not the only corrupt ones in Sharon's case, but also the prosecutors who knew that she was innocent and allowed her to be convicted anyway. 13 years after Sharon's conviction, the detective who wrongly arrested her talked about the facts of her case on cable TV. In this interview, he had the nerve to brag about what he did to my daughter at the police station, now shown on YouTube. Since the detectives in Sharon's case have since retired, along with the parole office, neither feel they are responsible for what they did to my daughter. And now they impact and taken of many years out of her life. At Sharon's trial, the same detective who testified against her didn't testify truthfully to what he did to her whatsoever. It's clear from the detective's television interview he had done something wrong to Sharon and broke the law when he admitted Sharon had an alibi, and in trial he testified that she didn't. Meanwhile, Sharon's petition to the governor of the state of New York, the New York State Attorney General Office, and most importantly, the Queens County District Attorney Office of the state of New York, who prosecuted her and requested that her case be reinvestigated and reopened. Thus far, the above-mentioned parties have been unwilling to do so. Well, and I want to know why. Because the facts of Sharon's case are very troubling and raise serious questions of concern, mainly about the detective's change of his child testimony about where Sharon was on the day in question and what he did to her at the police station. The governor and the state attorney general office should be more than willing to reinvestigate her case as a wrongful conviction and force the Queens District Attorney Office to do so as well, since the injustice initiated with their office. The courts should also be notified by the district attorney office that they have come into the possession of significant new evidence that would exonerate Sharon and at best hold a hearing on the basis of new information that has surfaced. Sharon has received some glimmer of hope. Recently, two people have come forth with sworn affidavits that indicate that Sharon was on the other side of town getting high when her boyfriend's murder happened and knocked out on a couch for days and didn't wake up until 2 days after the murder, a place 8 miles from where the murder took place. That being said, Sharon told me she is unwilling to raise this new information to the court because the judge continues to deny her a hearing no matter how much new information come forth that would exonerate her. Previously, when Sharon raised the issue of the detective's changing his sworn statement from her trial in a television interview, admitted that she had a verbal alibi, and confessing what he did to her at the police station, the court arbitrarily refused to grant her a new trial on these new facts that the jury didn't hear. Had the jury heard this information, they would have acquitted Sharon of her boyfriend's murder. Waiting for justice to be served is what Sharon is doing. But in the meantime, she appears before the August 12, 2012 parole board. Sharon was denied parole release based on the board's determination that she failed to show any remorse in her part of her ex-boyfriend's murder. According to the court records, the jury found that Sharon was not at the crime scene. They couldn't link her with the actual murders or that she did the shooting or that she even discussed a murder plot with persons who were convicted of her ex-boyfriend's murder. So in order for Sharon to be successful with obtaining her release from prison, she would have to lie to the parole board to get out. Looking back at Sharon's trial, Sharon's lawyer tried to get her to admit she had the gun and to plead guilty to criminal possession of a weapon in exchange for dropping the murder charges with a 6-year sentence, a charge she was acquitted of. So Sharon didn't take the plea. She was convicted of the murder charge and sentenced to 20 years to life. Sharon said that it is all over again. Since Sharon refused to lie to the parole board that she took part in her boyfriend's murder, she was denied release. Despite this obstacle, Sharon will reappear before the parole board in December 2013 or hopefully earlier. Where Sharon stands today is hoping a criminal investigator may take an interest in helping her bring forth other additional information that will exonerate her of her boyfriend's murder, a crime she didn't commit, and most important, to also obtain admission from the actual murders that she was not there accomplished. It is my belief as a mother that the district attorney office knows that she did not participate in her boyfriend's murder, but they continue to keep her locked up despite the evidence that does not connect her to the crime whatsoever. Presently, Sharon works at the prison law library, helping the prison population with assistance to legal matters, and all she works feverishly, hoping to obtain legal representation to overturn her conviction based on newly discovered evidence that was not presented at her trial and would exonerate her. All in all, I'm proud of Sharon. She has made a bad situation into a good one. Sharon created a program for teen prostitution and sex trafficking victims to help get her point across to young girls to make better choices on the inside now and when they are finally released. Hopefully when she's released, she can pass on her knowledge and jewels to them on the outside and reinforce upon them not to become a victim to the street or wind up dead. All she needs is an opportunity to put this program into practice and make a life for herself and help young girls by giving back to the community. Mr. Boyd, as your motto states, the streets don't love you. The streets were not kind to my daughter either. Finally, Mr. Boyd, I can only tell you that my daughter Sharon is factually, actually, and truly innocent. There are many Sharon Mabers in the country sitting innocently rotten in a cage because they can't get the help to free themselves from their injustice. It happens to women like Sharon every day. So the justice system keep my daughter locked up to keep her from telling the truth about some people who wanted my daughter silenced because of knowledge of police misconduct and corruption, which resulted in her being framed, railroaded for the murder of her ex-boyfriend, a crime she didn't, couldn't, and wouldn't commit. She wants them held accountable for her injustice. I hope this will not happen to another mother's daughter. Time will tell how much longer Sharon is held in prison and when justice will finally be served. As a mother, I thank you for helping me to publicize my daughter Sharon Mabry's miscarriage of justice.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Without a doubt. That right there is heartfelt, and I'm so thankful that we reached out to Sharon. I've seen Sharon's actually interview on TV, and I immediately spoke to my wife about it because I watch that ID channel all the time when the wife might be working somewhere else on something else. But she also felt that as well, and we reached out to Sharon, and she wrote us back, and we have been in contact with her for a while now. So we're definitely happy and proud to have you on the show tonight to speak out about this injustice. And from top to bottom, can you tell the viewers, Sharon was born and raised in Detroit, and how did Sharon stray from the word that you brought her up in? Because as we know, you've always been into the word of God all your life, correct?
Yes. Well, as a teenager, you know, children will, even though they might come up in a, with religious beliefs, because of association, and she decided this was a type of lifestyle that she would like to try out. And when she tried it out, she found that she liked it, and even to the point of being successful in that type of lifestyle, if you can say that. But then we know the type of lifestyle is not a good lifestyle, and everything else come with that lifestyle. And she was up for a minute, and then we know the rest. When drugs enter the picture, what can happen to a person? But Sharon was not raised that type of person. She was a nice girl, but for somewhere down the line, and with association, bad association, Sharon thought she would like the streets better than she did the life she was living.
That's right. And we, like you said, we know what drugs can do to young women, and men push these drugs on them, and then they take them and use them and abuse them and prostitute them. And unfortunately, that's the kind of life she got into. You know, and these men continued to control her.
Yes, they did.
With the drugs, you know, obviously a part of the situation. To the point where I don't know, you know, we can't speak for her, and she's not here to speak for herself, but Sharon ended up, I think she married somebody there in Detroit, and he took her to New York to prostitute her. He was her husband, and he was also her pimp.
Yes.
And he, maybe you could enlighten us a little bit more about that situation, but we know that she ended up to be a very high-end call girl, prostitute, or madam that even ran the prostitution house.
Yes, she did.
So could you tell tell us a little bit about that story and what went on there?
Well, it really started in Detroit before she left and before she married. She met some people who introduced her to that lifestyle. And then when she met this man that took her to New York, that was the worst thing that could have happened to her because he wasn't interested and didn't love her, I don't think, because you don't love anyone and treat them that way. So this is what led to the beginning of her downfall. If she had stayed here, I think maybe she could have got ahead on straight. But when she was away from me and in New York, then I didn't have contact with her to help her and to support her. And for that reason,
I think you're absolutely right, because she graduated high school and she got an education.
Yes.
So I think, you know, the drugs and the just being with the wrong people and them telling you that, you know, oh, it's going to be okay and you can have this and you can have that and all the material things that came along with it probably just overwhelmed her.
Yes, that's what did it. The association and seeing what people have, and then you at one time or another, you can obtain some of those things, and it's just going down a one-way street that, like it says, you don't come back because the streets do not love you. They just use you.
Exactly.
Yes.
When she was up in New York, did she keep in contact with you? Did you know what was going on up there after she left?
No, not much. I would have to try to track her down now and then. She would call. I knew that things were not right when I didn't hear from her, and I was thinking any day I would hear and get a call that she was gone. I'm so thankful that I didn't and that she has a chance to straighten herself up in her life. And I think as a 50-some-year-old woman, she'll be okay now, but I'm thinking of the time and the life that she's lost before. But I'm glad she can still be around to make corrections and help someone else. And she's good at that. She's a good teacher.
Right. And like you told us a little bit ago, she started a program for young teenage prostitutes and those
yes.
who have been involved in sex trafficking. What is
yes.
she doing with that? And how, I mean, we'll ask her too, but we would love to help her get that started on the outside. We know, you know, she's doing it on the inside, and I'm not sure what she's doing on the outside. Maybe you could let us know that.
Well, she says she's going to pursue that once she get out.
Okay.
She's really want to be a lawyer, but at this late date, she's into some kind of program. She's gotten a couple degrees, and she's going to work towards something like that. She's going to continue something like social work in her life
awesome.
Once she's out. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Arnita, you know, talk to us a little bit as a mother of anybody. I mean, there's a lot of people that go through this, and as mothers, we hurt, we ache, we yearn for our kids. You know, when they're doing wrong, we pray and we hope that they change. And talk a little bit to parents out there about things that they can do to maybe change or help their kids when they are out here in the street life or doing drugs or prostituting or whatever it may be.
As parents, and especially as you say, a mother, have a little bit more insight, and not that men don't care, but we have more affection being mothers. We carry these children 9 months. That is a bond for us. And because of that very reason, we can love them deeply. And we can recognize certain things. We have to stop and take time out of our busy schedules. We have to understand our children. We have to talk to them. We have to recognize when you see a change. We have to know about their associations, know about their whereabouts. And once we pin all of these down, then we're able to build a bond with our children where our children can come to us, where they can talk to us and let us know when they have a problem without going to the streets and letting the streets settle or answer their problems. Because as we had on the program, the streets do not love you. but we want to try to help our children to know we love them. But we have to not only tell them that we love them, we have to show them we love them, communicate, talk with them, take an interest in their lives. And by doing that, that will show them that we care about them. We have to take time out and spend with our children because they are our family, our life. They're the upcoming generation of this world. And as we know, they have to put it right on point. The streets don't love you, but you can make an imprint in the world by doing something that will be upbuilding to help the world, not to tear it down.
Yes, ma'am. And I know, Miss Anita, you know, by that being your only daughter, no one can even imagine how you feel as a mother because it's not like you got four or five daughters, you know. You
right.
only have one daughter.
And right.
That has to be mind-boggling to be away from your only daughter all these years. And she's not just in prison in Detroit, but she's
right.
in prison in a whole nother state.
Right.
How right. did that affect you, Miss Amanda?
Well, it really affects me all the time. I think about her every day because I'm getting older and I'm by myself. Now, I lost my husband 3 years ago. So I certainly would like her here with me because and I'm in my 70s and I may not be here too much longer and I would like to see my daughter. I want her here with me. And she would be able to help me and assist me, and I feel like we could really, as two women together, do something together and make an imprint. And that's what I'm looking forward to, seeing my daughter again. I get letters from her all the time. Matter of fact, even calls, and we talk, and I encourage her. You know, it's sad, and sometimes we cry together over the phone because of some of the conditions in these places, you know, and the unfair treatment. But like she said, I have nobody to blame but myself. So I'm just going to hope I can try to get out of this place. So that's what we're looking forward to.
Amen, you know. And that's a good thing that she do have you there to encourage her and to uplift her. And it's a blessing to have a mother that's done been there for you through all trials, tribulations, you know?
Yes.
And she recognizes that. And like she said, you know, she can't blame nobody but herself. But at the same time, she's done realized that the first part of healing in anybody's life is when you can recognize you have did wrong.
Right.
She has recognized that, and now she's willing to do the work of the Creator, and that's to give back to others. You know, once
that's
you give your second chance, it's not
mm-hmm.
about you.
Second that's right.
Second chance means helping others.
That's
as
right.
Well.
That's right.
You know, and we just want to say we're thankful that she went back out to us, and now we on the radio show now spreading her message, and definitely hoping someone will hear this segment and is willing to reach out to Miss Sharon because it's so much injustice that goes on around the world with these criminal systems. You know, they don't care
yes.
if you're guilty or innocent. They just really want to make a case and say, hey, I got somebody locked up now. You know,
mm-hmm. that's
and now
true.
We don't have to talk about that case no more. Let's go to John Doe case now.
Okay.
So
mm-hmm.
We have to understand that if nobody pulls for you and there's so many people behind the prison walls that's innocent and it's a lot of them that is guilty. But the ones that's innocent on the injustice case, their case is looked over and looked over. And it takes 20 years, and then all of a sudden you find out this man or woman is innocent, and they end up
mm-hmm.
in prison 20 years of their life.
That's the way it is with her, yes.
You
yes.
know? So we just thankful that you're here tonight, and I'm going to pass the mic back over to my missus.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to kind of go back through her story a little bit, and maybe we can help the listeners to understand a little bit more about exactly what happened with Sharon and her boyfriend or husband at the time. They had actually broken up and were not together when this happened.
That's true.
From my understanding, like you said, she was over with some friends. She had been getting high. Now, is the story true that she did discuss with friends that he had money that maybe they could get from him?
No, no. Everybody knew him, but she didn't discuss anything like that with him.
Okay.
All her thing was getting high.
Okay. So she was in her own world with her friends getting high.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm.
Now, she got, when she was already on, was she on probation at that time or parole already?
I think so because the...
She had to have been or at some time before that.
Yeah, because they had her being like an informant, telling them things.
Right.
She didn't share too much about that with me till later, and I didn't know that she was into that type of stuff either, you know. And I knew about the prostitution, but I didn't know she was dealing with the police, too, on that. So that was new to me.
My understanding is that after, at one point, because maybe the prostitution and the drugs or whatever, she had gotten caught, she was put on parole. But after they put her on parole, and with parole comes rules, like you said before, it comes rules that you're not supposed to hang out with any felons,
right.
You're not supposed to hang out with drug dealers, murderers, pimps, prostitutes, whatever,
mm-hmm.
what have you. But yet they turn around as they put her on parole and made some deals and said,
"That's right.
We'll cut you some slack if you continue to go out there and bring us information and give us some information
right.
about people."
Mm-hmm. And that's what she did. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's a double standard. The police do it all the time. I don't like it. I don't think it's good, but they do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm understanding too. After a while, she became, because of the lifestyle that she lived and the people that she knew and dealt with, she came across dirty cops. She saw, you know, the guys that were coming in using the prostitutes. The
right,
cops
the police,
coming
that's
in,
right.
Buying
mm-hmm. They
the
got
drugs.
Drugs. Mm-hmm.
So it came a point where she knew that she knew too much.
Mm-hmm.
And she stepped back out of that situation and even quit going to parole meetings or whatever.
Right, right. She was somewhere in Connecticut. I remember that. That was when the crime happened. She was really trying to get away from that type of lifestyle. But she was just too far gone as far as the drugs were concerned. She just didn't have enough strength. She needed somebody to help pull her up out of that. And
right.
I wasn't there to help her. Nobody else would because they're probably doing the same thing. So
they were too busy pulling her down instead of picking
yes.
her up.
So she had no help.
So
and
she,
if you
so
look at that film and you see her, I cried when I seen her at that police station.
Right.
And I looked, I said, is that my child? Because of how she looked.
Right.
You could tell she was under the influence. She didn't know who she was, where she was. And they made fun of her. When he said, look at her, look how she looked. You know,
right.
something to that effect.
Right.
So it's
right.
a hurting thing.
Yes, they made fun of her
mm-hmm.
hat and hair and boots and what have you.
Yes.
That makes me really upset too. How you know, and there's good cops and bad cops, I guess. But to get people in that interrogation room and totally tear them apart and put a gun to their head and allow
yes.
them to urinate on themselves and
yes.
to be in that much distress—that is abuse, and that is abuse gone way too far.
Yes, it is. Yes, she is.
That
she was really afraid. And I think that was one reason she was more so under the drugs. drugs and probably made her forget.
Not to mention even the information that she might have had on certain people that
right.
they might have threatened her in there as well.
Right, right. Like I said, I'm thankful she's alive, but under the circumstances, many have lost their life for less than this.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So my advice to young women is their association. That's what it starts with.
Exactly.
You hear on the news every day. We had a murder here in Detroit for someone I know. It was their grandson. He just went to pick up a pair of pants from someone he knew, but it was at a drug house. And on the news, four people got killed, and he was one of them.
Oh,
so it's your association. That's what it starts off with. And that's what it started off with her. And then you get to looking at people with this lifestyle. And then if you have that type of desire within you, you might want that type of lifestyle. You might go to any steps to try to get that type of lifestyle. And a lot of times you lose your life in that type of lifestyle. So thankful I still have my daughter and she has her head on straight.
Now, how many years has she been incarcerated already?
I think it was 16 or 17 years. I'm just trying to think. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a long time.
Yes, it is.
Well, we get letters regularly from her as well. And, you know, like we said, whatever we can do to help get her information out there. And if there's anyone out there that is hearing this program and wants to help Sharon and get this wrongful conviction overturned, she'd be very much open to hearing from you.
Yes, she would.
And you could get with us and we can get you the information for to Arnita or Sharon.
Okay. Okay.
And, well, we just hope that everything turns out for the best. And now, is the earliest she can get out is her next parole? You say that's December of 2013?
That's when she go up again before the parole.
Okay.
Yeah.
So any chance, no chance before then?
Not yet. And I think that's December of 13.
December, so it's another year.
Another year, mm-hmm.
Now, how long has Sharon been incarcerated now?
It's 16 or 17 years.
Okay, almost 20 years then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow. So, yeah, that's just that's mind-boggling, you know?
Yes, it
how
is.
How often do you get a chance to see Sharon?
I've seen her twice since she's been in there, but I talk to her at least once a week.
Okay, sounds good then.
And I'm not good at writing. She wants me to write a lot of times, especially if we don't get the telephone on for her to call. She has to have a telephone. But at least once a week I talk to her.
Oh, sounds great then.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she definitely keeps you full of letters, though, right?
Yes.
You were right.
I
you
have a
real voice.
Yes.
Sounds good, then, you know. Well, you know, is there anything else you would like the viewers to know?
Well, that's just about it. Just I hope they can listen to this type of information, take it to heart and apply it. And if it's some of the young ones that hear it, please pay heed to it and listen and watch your association, because association is where it all starts. Being with the wrong people, sometime you can lose your life.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here go all the misses, and, you know, we're just thankful that you know, people will definitely get a chance to hear this message of injustice right here for Sharon. And for anybody, I'm going to also give Sharon's writing information out in case anybody would like to write Miss Sharon. I'm going to give that information out.
Okay.
If anybody would like to write Miss Sharon on this injustice, you can send it to Sharon, S-H-A-R-O-N, last name, M-A-E-R-Y, and she's in the, that's a, what's a?
Tonic.
Tonic Correctional Faculty, and that's T-A-C-O-N-I-C, Correctional Faculty. And the address is 250 Harris Road. That's H-A-R-R-I-S Road. And that's Bedford Hills, B-E-D-F-O-R-D, Hills, H-I-L-O-S, New York. Zip code is 10507. And Sharon's prison number is 00G-0299. So if anybody would like to write Sharon, please don't hesitate to reach out to her, and she'll definitely be able to correspond with you. And all who dislike injustice, jump on board and start putting this message out there for people that's wrongfully in prison. All right, so I'm going to pass the mic over, and we're going to close out in a few minutes, but we just wanted to put Sharon's information out there as well.
Thank you so much.
Oh, no problem.
Okay, and just to kind of recap everything, I guess what we want, the main thing we want to put out here is that Sharon was wrongly convicted, unjustly framed, abused, and coerced into making statements that she did not want to say, did not want to put out there. She was not in the right frame of mind to put out there, but after 16 hours in the interrogation room, and like we said before, totally abused and mentally, physically, emotionally, the things that she had to go through, you know, she was just framed and convicted wrongly. So what we want people to know is that if there's anyone out there that can help Sharon, that can help her with her case to get this injustice overturned and to be able to get her vindicated and get her released from prison, please step up and let us know, let Arnita, Sharon's mother, know. If there's anyone that knows of anyone that can help, please let us know so we can get that information to the right person. And with that, Arnita, are there any last comments, anything you'd like to add to that or to change or to say regarding that?
Just that I hope someone that is listening will hear this plea from me as a mother. Please help my daughter. Help her, because she, as any mother, we would say, I know all of us would say our children were good. They just get off on the wrong feet sometimes. But she has her head on straight. And being out of prison, she will be able to help so many people. And I know she will, because she's that type of person. She has a chance now. Her head is clear. So please help my child. Thank you so much.
And let me just add one other, a couple of other things to that. She was convicted of murder, but she's not, they don't have any evidence of anything connecting her to the murder as well.
That's
no gun,
true.
Not being at that place. Affidavit saying that she was at a different place miles away from the murder. So, you know, there's definitely a lot of misinformation and injustice done to Sharon. Now, the police officers that were involved have since retired? Are they?
They retired.
And refused to help or say anything or.
No, but they do have him on tape. One of them, I've seen him on tape. You know, making all kind of remarks about her. Yeah, but he's retired.
I saw part of that. If it was one that was on the TV program.
Right.
Where he actually did say that he got in her face, and he admitted doing some of those things that,
yes,
that
he did.
About.
Mm-hmm. He sure did.
Wow. Well, like we said, you know, we ask for your help, and we pray for her and all of those who are wrongly convicted, and you know, we pray that the judges and juries and people in this world will really open their eyes and see what's going on and seek the truth and not just,
yes,
you know, what you're made to believe, but to stand up for justice and stand up for righteousness and to do the right thing, not,
yes,
because other people say it and, you know, try to make you believe it.
Yes. The streets don't love you back.
Definitely, they don't.
Yes.
Well, we thank you, Arnita, so much for coming on and sharing your story with us. And, you know, it's hard for you, I'm sure, to come on and talk about. And, you know, we're glad that you did. We're proud of you for you know, coming on and talking about, you know, Sharon's story. She's gone through a lot, and you've gone through a lot. And, you know, we're glad that you're both still here to share your story. Because, like you said, in the end, you know, God willing, you can come together and you can make a strong, bold statement and really help other people.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
And, yeah, like I said, we'll get this show to you so that you can get it to Sharon.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
We're going to, thank you. We're going to have some laughter now. A last thing, listen.
Oh, yeah. We just want to say once again that was a great informal show for people to have information about Ms. Sharon. And we would just like to once again thank all our listeners that are tuned in every Wednesday night. And we would like to let all our listeners know, don't forget about our fourth annual Christmas toy drive here in Arizona. And all the information is on our website, www.thestreetsfromloveyouback.ning.com. And also, don't forget about the fight that's coming up December 15th. And that's going to be at the American Legion in Tempe. And it's going to be a great night as well from the Phoenix Boys and Girls Center. And that event is sponsored by the Streets Don't Love You Back movement. And once again, we would like to give Kelly Finn a big shout-out, her daughter Jennifer, and her father, Mr. Al, for starting the whole legacy. So we would just like to thank everybody. And also, we would just like to thank all our members that spread the message throughout the streets to the youth and others. And we would like to thank all our members behind the prison walls who spread the message as well. The Streets Don't Love You Back. And we just like to just thank everybody who supports us in educating these kids and educating others that, you know, gangs, drugs, and violence is all a dead end. So we just like to thank everybody. And pass the mic to the missus case she got any last words, but also don't forget to do your Christmas shopping in our online store, and that's once again is the Streets Don't Love You Back .ning.com. You can go there for all the information you need for everything, and we thank you.
All right, just a couple of more quick announcements. We're having a book signing December 22nd here in Maricopa at Seven Cups Coffee. Rob will be there with both of his books, Streets Don't Love You Back and Never Hit a Woman, and that will be from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. And you can also get that information on the website. And as we always do, we're still helping the homeless, and we will continually be collecting clothes, socks, underwear, backpacks, hygiene products, and anything that can be given to the shelters and different homes for the homeless so that they can have a clean change of clothes and be able to take a shower. And as we continue with that and the many things that we do, especially through the holiday season, please remember to help someone in need and give a helping hand. And with that, we're going to go out tonight with a song, Never Give Up by OG Suicide of Los Angeles, California. Have a great week. Remember, the streets don't love you back. And we'll be back here next Wednesday night, 8:30 Pacific Time, 11:30 Eastern Standard Time. Have a great week.
Look, homies, what's good with y'all?
What's up with y'all, huh? What's good?
Can't make no shots.
I mean, you know, can't give up, though. You got to keep trying, you know. Practice makes perfect.
I love
you. You know, that's for all y'all. You know what I mean? Just, you know, stay focused. Don't give up. You know, never give up. No matter what it is in life, you can't give up on anything. That's real. You know what I mean? So just keep your shot going. All y'all, you know.
Okay.
I look forward to coming to the game one day. NBA, man. I'm trying to see y'all there.
Yes.
All right? Okay, love ones. Y'all be good, all right? I just came to check on y'all.
That's all right.
No matter what it is in life.